I want to take a second to remind you to sign up for the Poso Daily Brief. It is completely free. It'll be one email that's sent to you every day. You can stop the endless scrolling, trying to find out what's going on in your world. We will have this delivered directly to you, totally for free. Go to humanevents.com/Poso. Sign up today. It's called the Poso Daily Brief. Read what I read for show prep. You will not regret it. Humanevents.com/Poso. Totally free. The Poso Daily Brief.
This is what happens when the fourth turning meets fifth generation warfare.
A commentator, international social media sensation, and former Navy intelligence veteran.
This is Human Events with your host, Jack Posobiec.
Deliver us from evil.
A judge in Illinois just ruled illegal immigrants have the right to keep and bear arms.
President Biden says the House and Senate are working to finalize a package that can be brought to the floor, and he will sign it immediately.
Today, former President Donald Trump told the Supreme Court he should be granted absolute immunity in the election interference case, saying a ruling against him would incapacitate every future president and open them up to blackmail and extortion.
Last night, a federal appeals court put SB4, basically the law, back on hold, but there is another change. The appeal is once again setting off uncertainty along the border. The late night order came from the Fifth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. This comes basically as the U.S. Supreme Court had cleared the way for the strict immigration law to allow state law enforcement officials to arrest those who come into this country illegally.
The closely watched Republican Senate race in Ohio. NBC News projects Trump-backed Bernie Moreno has won the GOP primary in the Buckeye State.
Let's hear a round of applause for a patriot, a hero, and a proud American, Dr. Peter Navarro. A political prisoner, and let's get it going loud enough that Peter will be able to hear us behind the walls of that jail in Miami where he sits tonight.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard today's edition of Human Events Daily, live back in Washington, D.C. Today is March 20th, 2024, Anno Domini. As you saw, that was our event last night. Mar-a-Lago flew back to D.C. Now we're here because we got a lot going on. But more importantly, and most importantly, Peter Navarro. Peter Navarro is a political prisoner. He's being held behind bars. I want everyone to go to givezengo.com/Navarro. I'm going to say it again, givezengo.com/Navarro. I'm going to be tweeting this out. But we do have also his address, his prisoner number 04370. Prisoner number 04370. Now, you might know him as Dr. Peter Navarro. You might recall that he was the thorn in the side of the Chinese Communist Party. You might even remember that he was the first person to call for Dr. Anthony Fauci to be fired before anyone did. Now his name, under the Biden administration, is prisoner number 04370. Do you get it yet? They came for him. They'll come for you. They'll come for your family. They will come for your children. They're already coming for your children. And this is why yesterday we also announced at that event that we signed a deal on a new book that we're putting together, Skyhorse Publishing, and we're doing this. It's myself, Joshua Lysak. He'll be up later in the show today. The book is all about how to understand the enemy, how to identify the enemy, the enemy's playbook, and most importantly, the playbook to defeat them. It's called The Unhumans, The Secret History of Communist Revolutions and How to crush them. We go through, and this is what we do, is we took the China files, we took the Chronicles of the Revolution, everything that you've seen from Human Events Daily that you've seen here on the show, we took all that, synthesized it, we're adding new to it, and we've come up with a system that communists use, whether the communists of the past, the Marxist-Leninists, the Maoists, or the cultural Marxists of today. and we show you how to break their system. But most importantly, we show you how to effectively fight back. The right is up against ascendant cultural Marxism, and they're spending the day today in the House complaining that Biden isn't held to the same standard as Trump. Oh, there's a double standard. Oh, you're not playing by the rules. You're not playing fair. This isn't how you beat the communists. This ain't it at all. And so many people are sitting there saying, oh, Jack, would you see this? But is anybody getting impeached? Anybody getting arrested? Peter Navarro is behind jail cell right now. Peter Navarro is behind bars. And you're sitting up there complaining about double standards and hypocrisy. This is why the right loses. This is why the right has lost for 40 years. You win elections, but you lose the country. It's time to start going on offense. We're going to play smash mouth. You take one of ours down, we take 10 of yours down. Darren Beatty joins me next here. Human Events Daily continues. Ladies and gentlemen, one of the best ways that you can support us here at Human Events and the work that we do is subscribing to us on our Rumble channel. Make sure you're subscribed, you hit the notifications so you'll never miss a clip, you'll never miss a new live episode, and we're putting them out every single day of the week.
In the hood, I rolled with Bloods, and them boys had a saying. You can't be listening to all that slappy whack, trimatazole, it's a bam ship, nippy bam bam, like Human Events with Jack Posobiec.
Jack Posobiec back live, Human Events Daily. Look, folks, as we speak, Texas is picking up the pieces after 1.1 million acres of land were destroyed in one of the worst wildfires in history. And who knows how badly that's going to affect the supply chain of food across America. So today's episode sponsor comes in. My Patriot Supply has helped millions of American families prepare for the uncertain future, whether it's an economic crisis, a supply chain disaster, or World War III. Many families, like my own, start with their three-month emergency food kit. With 22 food and beverage choices, you'll always have something tasty at your fingertips, and the kiddos, they'll never get bored. Over 2,000 calories a day, and you will get all the nutrients you need. And the three-month emergency food kits come sealed inside the ultra-durable packaging and can last up to 25 years. So stock up all the food kits and your family. Get what you need, MyPatriotSupply.com. You get one kit for two. You'll get each kit for $200 off. Protect yourself, protect your people. Get your kits, MyPatriotSupply.com. They ship fast and free. MyPatriotSupply.com. Protect yourself, protect your people, protect your family's future. Again, MyPatriotSupply.com. I want to bring in Darren Beatty, Revolver News. Darren, so much going on right now, but I want to put this through the lens and hey, what can I say? I'm on the hook to sell some books, but through this lens that, and you know, we're calling it the Unhumans, which is a, you know, obviously a very aggressive kind of label, but I'm trying to wake the right up because I feel like the right doesn't know how to fight back, because the right seems to have this pathology that if they just claim equal treatment, if they just complain the rules aren't being applied properly, that someone's going to sweep in and magically stop all the cultural Marxists in every institution, and they'll lay down their swords and say, oh, my bad, you got me. You're right, it was hypocrisy, it was a double standard. Our bad, we're gonna go leave now and walk away. Darren, what is it about the right that they just can't seem to get it?
Well, that's a huge and extremely important question. I'll be honest with you, Jack. I heard you before the break mention Smash Mouth, and I couldn't help but think of the song about not the sharpest tool in the shed and the shape of an L on the forehead. That's the question. So why do conservatives, why does the right keep having the shape of an L on the forehead? Why are we such losers when it comes to the real cultural battles? Especially when you compare it with the fact that we've actually won in the more narrow political electoral sense fairly often. But that doesn't translate into any meaningful, enduring cultural victories, or really victories in the realm of institutional power and the capability and the will to exercise that power. So there are a lot of dimensions to that. And it cashes out in a very practical and visceral way. It's not a theoretical question. It's the question of why is Peter Navarro in jail and Mayorkas isn't, and Hillary isn't, and Hunter isn't? Pick your criminal scumbag, David Brock isn't. That's the question. That gives you people a sense of what's at stake. Not that, you know, we should necessarily be frothing at the mouth to throw other people in prison, but how about just at least not have them throw our people in prison? And there's an amazing chilling effect, because basically anybody recognizably and conspicuously in the fight, you know, I hope it's not the case, probably won't be, but anybody who's conspicuously in the fight might actually go to prison for something completely stupid and contrived and politically motivated. We have Navarro in there right now. We have the individual we've spoken about before, Doug Mackey, who's facing 7 years for a meme. Can happen to anybody. It certainly could happen to you, Jack. Could even happen to me. You know, if we're recognizably in the fight, it could happen to anybody watching this. So it's, you know, the unfortunate thing, though, is it's such a big problem. And there's so many attractive fake solutions. There are so many attractive, good sounding solutions. There's so many solutions that are kind of maybe even attractive to the donor set, because nobody really wants to put all their chips in. And it's, you know, understandable to a degree. You put all your chips in, you could lose everything. But that's really the only way you can take things back in that meaningful and enduring sense. And unfortunately, as I said, there's no easy answer. It's not a matter of simply winning an election. It's, yes, winning an election, but using an election in the right way, undergoing the laborious and difficult process of shaping the institutions, staffing the bureaucracies. Now, I was just having this conversation earlier today about Bill Barr. Yeah, you know, Barr did some good things. And, you know, at one point, he even called out the manifest ridiculousness of our mail-in ballot system, just basically inviting massive fraud. He, of course, changed his tune. Trump said it correctly. Trump, actually, I think, has mostly been too nice, Barr, but he's come around to stating the obvious, which is that Barr was a coward. But it's not enough to identify that Barr was a coward, because to say that he was a coward correctly is to presuppose in some way, or at least to imply, that if he hadn't been a coward, he could have gotten the DOJ in line. But the unfortunate reality is that's not the case. Even if he hadn't been a coward, the DOJ, simply due to negative inertia of a bureaucracy like that, probably wouldn't have fallen in line to his command, in the same way that the executive branch didn't fall in the line under Trump's command, and Trump was certainly no coward. So there's basically two layers to it. We need to get our people on board. We need to give them software updates and the will and the courage to do what needs to be done. But that's not enough on the bureaucratic level. There's the other side has this vast and extremely capable lawfare architecture and national security architecture. And those don't happen overnight. You know, you've had great discussions with Mike Benz about different centers of political power, you know, the Cowboys and the Yankees and so forth. Those real pillars of power are not created overnight. So that's part of the reason why it's not an easy answer, is that everyone wants to hear, oh, we win an election, we put the real killers in, and then it turns around. But unfortunately, it's a long process, and we don't really have the time. So that's the unsatisfying answer that is the true answer.
And really what you do get, I think, is you get it on the ground floor, basically. So Trump becomes president, and let's just sort of say, well, what does this mean for the election? So Trump becomes president, and then what? And you see, of course, you know, the Democrats are trying to make this Project 2025 and some of these other various groups, Center for American Renewal, these into the, you know, boogeymen and zombie stalking horses of of the left. But what it really is just an attempt to say, number one, you go into these bureaucracies, you start firing people just left and right, absolute left and right. And you scare enough. So, and I'll say this as a guy who has been in the federal civil service, that as an intelligence officer, that you need to set up a new incentive structure whereby in the way to get ahead in the bureaucracy is competence. The current way to get ahead in the bureaucracy and really any institution in America today is loyalty to the party. And this is actually something that is endemic and key to the cultural Marxists, because they specifically go for people who don't have any other skills and don't have any other talents and don't have the ability to make anything of themselves. But what could they possibly have? They have loyalty. And they know, the party knows, and when I say party here, I mean more than just, you know, sort of the official Democrat Party. I'm speaking of sort of the cultural Marxist agenda, if you will, the cabal, that the regime, that they know the people who will be the most loyal are the people who have nothing else if they are not empowered by the regime. These are the people who will become the most strident and loyal petty soldiers and petty tyrants of the regime, because they know if the regime falls, they've got nowhere else to go.
You know, that's an excellent point. And actually, I've had a similar discussion oriented toward the somewhat, the kind of, in one sense, unusual prominence that the transsexuals have enjoyed in what I call the globalist American empire. Why transsexual? We did one of our, I think, most insightful pieces at Revolver explored this in the context of one of the historical antecedents, which is the Janissaries of the Ottoman Empire. And we explore some interesting parallels there. But for the purposes here, it suffice to say that there is no creature more vulnerable than the transsexual, and therefore more dependent on the regime. There's typically no family formation and estrangement from the existing family. They're a kind of bizarre expression of humanity, to put it in a way, and in any other context would be extremely vulnerable. Therefore, they owe everything to the regime. They're completely dependent on the regime.
They are completely loyal because they're dependent. We have a quick break. Darren, you and I think we're right on the same wavelength here on this. The people who would otherwise be completely marginalized by society with nothing else to offer must depend on the regime, and they will fight tooth and nail to protect. We'll be right back, Darren Beatty. Unhumans, the new book, is out soon.
Now you talk about influencers. These are influencers, and they're friends of mine. Jack Posobiec. Where's Jack? Jack, he's done a great job.
All right, Jack Posobiec, back live, Human Events Daily. Guys, I got to tell you, I like knowing exactly where my food comes from. And with Moinkbox, that place is from small family farms all across this country. You can help save the family farm and get access to the highest quality meat on earth when you join the Moink movement today. Moink runs their businesses from a town of 97 people in Newark, Missouri, and they are helping save our tradition, our values, and helping save rural America with every order. Moink delivers grass-fed and grass-finished beef and lamb, pastured pork and chicken, sustainable wild-caught Alaskan salmon straight to your door. You choose the meat. It gets delivered in every box, like ribeyes, chicken breast, pork chops, salmon fillets, and the best bacon. Look, I love this stuff. When Tanya Tate gets it in, I say we need to cook it up immediately. So support American farmers by signing up at moinkbox.com/poso right now. And the Human Events audience will get free bacon for 1 year. That's 1 year of the best bacon you'll ever taste, but for a limited time only. Spelled moinkbox.com/poso. That's moinkbox.com/poso. Darren Beatty, you were just going through and talking about how there are certain groups that are favored by the regime, and specifically because they are dependent on the regime. You mentioned specifically how this is where the transgender movement comes from, and I completely agree. We also saw this, by the way, the Bolsheviks used a similar system. It wasn't transgender, but it was, they would take all the sort of conquered imperial peoples from around the empire. They would take the Georgians and the Central Asians and the Tatars and the Cossacks and, you know, Stalin, of course, was Georgian. And they would say, come join us. We'll get rid of those Russians. We'll get rid of those. It's almost like systemic racism, right? Russian privilege. Slavic privilege, I guess, throughout the empire. We'll take them down and we'll replace them in systems of power, the dekulakization. It's actually very similar, but what I think is amazing is that there's so many people who, on the right, they either willfully don't see it happening right before their eyes, or they see it and they don't really know how to respond. They don't really know what they're supposed to do.
Yeah, it's true. And I mean, I think partly the reason for that is that there are no really, I mean, yes, there are striking parallels with Bolsheviks and others, but in another case, it's the disconnects that make it so difficult for people to fully appreciate what type of authoritarian system we're in. They're looking for these overt kind of Soviet signs when really the more subtle mechanisms have already taken root so deeply. And the other side of that is there is still, at least for now, a certain degree of material prosperity in the United States. And so there's this weird cultural condition, this weird combination of relative material prosperity, but also kind of cultural chaos and anxiety that I think people just find extremely paralyzing and very difficult to mobilize in that kind of context, and prevents any kind of organizational response that you might expect given certain kind of objective signifiers of where everything is going with how corrupt and vindictive the regime has been politically.
Well, and this is something that, and we're going to have Joshua Lysak on here in a minute, my co-author on this piece, but we go through this in depth where we outline, this is the classic Marxist playbook, but it's not just destroying and changing the language, it's also playing with your own values against you, turning your own values against you. So they'll always claim it's about equality of some sort, it's always about granting more rights, it's all about equal treatment, etc. And suddenly, if you're not for those, as an example, I remember throughout the government, they would say that it's political for you to have a, you know, a Trump or even a Biden, you know, bumper sticker, let's say, up at your office. But if you were to put up a BLM flag, well, that's not political at all, because that's just representing a community. If you're putting up a trans flag, that's just representing a community. That's not a political movement, even though they are the most powerful political movements in America. And if you say anything against them, now suddenly you're anti-Black, you're a racist, you're anti-trans. If you're against Antifa, you must be a fascist. If you think that George Floyd died of a fentanyl overdose, you know, you're banished from the internet, et cetera, et cetera. We all know about this. And so this is how, and you know, don't even get me started on the, you know, questioning about the role of women, or if you say anything, you're a misogynist. So the idea is they take these quote unquote reforms positions, and then use it against people who are like your sort of old school, old right, blue-pilled conservatives, saying, whoa, I'm all for equal rights. I'm all for equality. I think those things are great. I think you guys are just going a bit too far. And this is why you find so many people in conservatism, I think, you know, and ending up just acquiescing to this, because they never actually draw the line in the sand and say, wait a minute, you guys don't actually care about this stuff. You just want to destroy civilization.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think that's certainly the case. And, you know, conservatism has a number of disadvantages. One is that there's still a struggle on the right to kind of naturally appeal to the young and gifted, sort of a a high human capital attractor. There's difficulties there due to multifarious reasons. But then there's also this sense that kind of dispositionally as well as ideologically, conservatism is kind of a, they just want to be left alone. I've said in other interviews in different contexts that it's interesting to juxtapose a slogan that I guess is more associated with libertarians, but I think a lot of conservatives dispositionally embrace it, this idea of don't tread on me, basically leave me alone. Whereas the other side, their slogan, at least for a time, was silence is violence, which is an inherently expansionist, aggressive, even kind of imperialist notion. It's not, if there's one person in the room who isn't affirmatively for you, that's an attack on you. It's like kind of the George Bush neoconservatism, you know, if you're not with us, you're against us sort of thing. And while it was a huge failure in terms of neoconservatism, it's been a massive success culturally for the left because they take much more active steps. They have a cultural vanguard that is not kind of bourgeois. And so they're able to do things that conservatives aren't. So those two things are related, but I do think they account for a lot of the striking asymmetry in kind of cultural and institutional power you see. You have a lot of people whose job it is to be political and cultural activists on the left. There's an economy that sustains that, and there are human types who are doing that. You know, the single women, the whole NGOs, the whole nonprofit industry. There are so many things that are disguised, but they're frankly political movements. And it's very hard to find the equivalent of that on the right. And it's really not set up for that. And the reasons for that are not superficial. They go all the way down into the kind of underlying political psychology of what it means to be a conservative, which is kind of, you know, don't rock the boat, leave me alone, don't tread on me, sort of small business, suburbia. There are elements of this that kind of correspond to the id of conservatism in America and that are subsidized and sustained by this fact that I mentioned earlier, which is this relative material prosperity. So, which would be fine, I suppose, if other things were okay, but this combination between the material prosperity, relatively speaking, it's getting less and less so as with inflation and everything, but the combination of that and this profound cultural anxiety driven by technology and politics and these other factors, that's really a tough and new terrain to be in politically that I think has proven to be especially challenging for conservatives and the right.
But Darren, if we use government power, what if the left uses government power against us? You know, actually, I would respond to the don't tread on me and say, well, you know, there's a software upgrade that needs to be installed among conservatives and say, yes, the Gadsden flag, of course, says don't tread on me. But also don't forget, folks, that it also depicts a rattlesnake. And the entire point of that being is supposed to be that once trod upon, the rattlesnake strikes. It isn't just don't tread on me and I'm going to run away. It's don't tread on me or else. And I feel like the right has forgotten the or else part. The rattlesnake has fangs, poisonous fangs, and venom.
Yes, that's certainly true. But even then, there's not that psychopathic expansionism that's inherent in the
yes.
And as much as I hate to say it, there's an efficacy to that psychopathic expansionism. It's like whoever complains the most, they get their way. Whoever, you know, there's something very powerful about that.
I'll throw this out, and I tweeted this morning, and I tweeted it just as we were talking here. I said, it is not enough to simply oppose communism. You must become actively anti-communist. Last minute here, Darren Beattie, Revolver News.
Absolutely. And, you know, there was something called the O'Sullivan's Law back in the day that addressed this kind of underlying dynamic logic of institutions, that any institution that is not affirmatively or explicitly right is either left or will inevitably become so in time. So that, you know, pretty much says it all on the institutional level. The default, the inertia all goes to the other side. We have a very long road. It's not going to help us by sugarcoating it or telling sweet lies or offering cheap and easy false solutions. We have to go through the long, difficult work that might be, you know, a decade or even more than that of really reforming things such that we have legal power and we have bureaucratic power just like the left does now.
It's as simple as that. Revolver.news showing us the way forward. We know who the pipe bomber is. We just need someone to actually give us the details. Joshua Lysak, co-author of Unhumans, joins us next.
Jack, where is Jack? Where is Jack? Where is he? Jack, I want to see you. Great job, Jack.
Thank you.
What a job you do. You know, we have an incredible thing. We're always talking about the fake news and the bad, but we have guys, and these are the guys who should be getting Pulitzers.
All right, Jack, so we're back live, Human Events Daily. So we did do the big book announcement last night, Skyhorse Publishing. We put the deal together. The book is titled The Unhumans, The Secret History of Communist Revolutions and How to Crush Them. And I'm not working on this all by myself. No, no, no. So what we did was we took the China Files and Chronicles of the Revolution. And then I sat down and I said, look, I don't have time, out of the bandwidth for this. And I reached out to a guy who I thought would be the best author that I knew out there that did this kind of stuff. His name is Joshua Lysak, and he has been working on this for years. And we've decided to work together, team up, co-author on this, signed the deal with Skyhorse. Couldn't be more excited to be working with him. Joshua, tell me about why you wanted to come and work on this project.
Hey, Jack. Thanks for having me on. It's good to be back. Several years ago, I was executive producer for a documentary called Better Left Unsaid. And it was an expose of the very little known history of communist uprisings throughout the world. You know, here in the West, everybody is always talking about Nazis this, Nazis that, the far right this, the far right that. And the far left is usually seen as a bunch of pot-smoking hippies who have protests and hold up pretty signs with rainbow flags and whatnot. And that's about the level of harmlessness that they are attributed to in popular culture. And yet that is not the case. The body count of the far left is 10x that of the far right and beyond in just the 20th century alone. And of course, Nazi paraphernalia and whatnot are illegal in many places, or at the very least frowned upon. But far left equivalent symbols are cool. They're rad. That's how you show that you're a rebel.
Your professor might be wearing them when you show up for class.
Yes, there is something deeply wrong when the ideology that unhumans people, that seizes their rights to life, liberty, and property wherever they go, across race, across place, across time, across the centuries. And there's been almost 300 years of communist revolutions. This is what they do wherever they go. And yet that's just not talked about. And because it's not talked about, they can move almost undetected. And when there are those who detect their activity, such as Senator Joseph McCarthy, they are maligned as conspiracy theorists, as anti-Semites, as fascists, and so on. And so working on this film a number of years ago, I thought it is time to tell that untold story. The film was critically acclaimed by those that we would want it to be critically acclaimed by. It won an award. And I thought, you know, one day I think I'll be revisiting this topic. And so when you did the Chronicles of the Revolution series in December of this past year, I sent you the movie and I said, dude, this is what I've been talking about here in this. And it made sense for us to say, how do we tell these untold stories of communism, of the far left, when they show up and they do their thing? And what are the parallels in the present day? And what are the parallels from the past? And how to stop the communists? Or rather, well, and this is those who unhuman everyone wherever they go. Hence, it's called The Unhumans, because this is what they do.
This is exactly what they do. something that you've done in going through the material that we put together, China Files, Chronicles of Revolution, and I've seen you do it in other work as well, is that you've systemized what it is that the unhumans do from place to place. There's different names for it. It's not always called cultural Marxism or Marxism, Marxist-Leninism, Maoism, et cetera. There's different French Revolution, egalitarianism, but there's always different names for it. But what you've done is you've systemized this and come up with not only what their system is, but also found a way to create a competing system or a way for at least dismantling their system. Walk us through a little bit how it was that you did that.
Yes. So we first look at what tends to happen when this force of anti-civilization, when they rise up, what is it that they do? Well, one of the first things that they do is they separate what they see as the haves versus have-nots in any society. Basically, those subversives, they look at who are our potential allies, our minions, who can do our bidding to help us seize power. And after they go about that separating, they then begin messaging. And that's where the propaganda begins, the mass manipulation, where they're able to plant their mental model, their reality, that mass resentment. They're able to work it into the people that they've selected as being their targets for their underlings. And then what they do is they infiltrate key institutions, important organizations, so on and so forth, so that they can effectively win before fighting. They have the upper hand, whereas the powers that be had no idea what was coming, whether it was the White Army under Tsar Nicholas II, or whether it was the normal everyday moderates of pre-Civil War Spain, or it's 1950s USA or present-day USA. You don't see the revolution coming, and that's why it works out so well. And so what we do is we simply, by following their playbook, we can use it against them. And we close out the book with a rousing call to action and a plan and hope that we can win. And we show you how.
And that's what's really incredible. And I've seen you do this with other writers and other industries. I mean, you've worked on a ton of books in the past, and that's what you always find. And I remember reading your previous book, So Good They Call You Fake, and one of the things that you talk about in there specifically is working with people to find those types of systems. And this is typically, you might see it in a business book or a memoir type work. But what you've done here is you've examined the, you know, and I had all of this information about communists and, you know, these stories and these horrific things that they've done. But what I had never really been able to do is actually turn it into a system. And maybe they don't even realize that they're working off of the same system over and over and over. But there's one key piece that we came to in the writing, and it's that, you know, people keep asking this question, and I hear it on the right over and over and over, and they say, why do people still keep supporting communism if it's killed 100 million people? As you say, it's 10x. It's 10x the worst atrocities that we've seen. Biggest mass murder in the world, Chairman Mao. Why isn't that, you know, is that even still in the Guinness Book? I don't even know. But why is it that people still keep supporting it? And I say, you're not asking the right question because you don't even have the right mental model yet. You don't have the right frame. They look at 100 million dead and they say, that's a good start. They say, we need more of that because the people that they've killed, they believe, are enemies to whatever the flavor of the particular revolution is. They're enemies of the revolution. They're enemies of progress. They're enemies of the future. They're enemies of the Khmer Rouge. They're enemies of the people. People's enemies are always, that's always a famous one. But they will say, they typically target the same people. It's predominantly the religious, small business owners, landlords, of course, is a huge, huge target for them. The same way we see religious landowners and patriots, landlords and landowners and small business owners being targeted specifically right now today. And this is why the things that we go through and detail are actually the same things that we're all experiencing on a regular basis.
Yes, there is a subtle difference in the post-World War world. And that is, wars are fought, and you having a military experience understand something that a lot of people don't, which is that warfare has changed. It used to be what was kinetic war, hot war, shooting, the one with the most bombs, the best navy, won in an open conflict. Nowadays, wars are described as low-intensity conflict or irregular warfare, where wars can be waged on all fronts in the information space, in education, cyber warfare, and so on, to achieve military objectives on behalf of a government, a regime, or a movement. But they're so effective at doing it with highly specific targets, they do not provoke an organized response. And so when you look at the culture war in the United States and the West at large over the last 60 to 70 years, we see nothing but failure by conservatives, by moderates, by the right, and by the center. Why do we see that? Because we are in the midst of a communist revolution 2.0. It is a low-intensity revolutionary war that the right and moderates have no idea is even being fought, hence why they lose everything all the time.
We'll be right back.
But it's time
for a quick break. Joshua Lysak, hold that thought, because this is the most important information you are going to hear today. The book is Unhumans. Joshua and myself putting it out. How to fight the communists and the cultural Marxists.
Long hours. I'm always listening to Human Events with Jack Posobiec.
All right, Jack Posobiec back live, Human Events Daily. We are back here, Washington, D.C., where spring is spring. By the way, we do have breaking news. So just as we started the show yesterday talking about Peter Navarro being thrown in jail, talk about someone who's been in a 14-year legal drama, Julian Assange. Apparently, the Department of Justice is now exploring a potential plea deal wherein they would allow Julian Assange to, quote, plead guilty to a reduced charge of, quote, mishandling classified information, potentially in exchange for, I would hope it would be in exchange for foregoing trial and foregoing extradition to the United States, hopefully time served on house arrest, or certainly to his time in Belmarsh Prison in the UK. Would suffice. Even then, I still don't think that that is something that's fair. Joshua, this is a perfect example of what we're talking about. Here's a guy who, under every other rule, would be simply operating as a journalist in the United States. The Washington Post and the New York Times put out classified information every single day. It's actually their job description. And yet Julian Assange, someone who does so without the blessing of the U.S. government and the Western governments and makes them look bad, well, he's treated as a terrorist and he's thrown in jail for doing the exact same thing on his blog. And again, I would say this to anybody who's dealing with these people, whether you're right, middle, center, even if you're one of those like old school liberal Democrats, you have to stop treating them as regular people. They are just not.
That's right. What we have right now is this broken mental model that a lot of people have, that everyone's acting in good faith. Everyone's doing their best. That does not seem to be the case when you perform a thorough review of history, when there have been those who crush the opposition using every tool available to them. Of course, lawfare. Former President Trump is facing lawfare. Elon Musk is facing lawfare. Julian Assange is facing a lawfare, where these ridiculously trumped up, charges are levied against these individuals. Why are they levied against these individuals? Because they are seen as enemies of the revolution. Now, what is the revolution? Well, the revolution is the upending of the old social order. It is the replacing of the old values, the old ways, with the new ones. And that has required significant lawbreaking for the regime to do that. And then when someone like Julian Assange calls that out and proves and demonstrates it, and he's not, let's say, part of an institution of the far left, like the Washington Post, like the New York Times, because he's a solo operator, he is therefore an enemy of the revolution. He is someone who's revealing what it is that they're up to spy on, to seize the privacy, seize the rights of U.S. and other citizens in the West. He therefore becomes an enemy. And when you understand that the mindset that the Unhumans have is oppressed versus oppressor, things make sense. You realize that hypocrisy is a feature. It's not a bug. It's that they hold you, the enemy, to a different standard than they hold themselves, because they're the good guys in their own mind. And when you view yourself as the good person, anything you do, any means you use to further your good ends as you define them, therefore becomes justified.
I actually, the way I always take that is when I say that hypocrisy is a feature, because to them it is not hypocrisy, it is instead hierarchy. So the hierarchy in their system, again, as you say, it's oppressor versus oppressed. And so because they view, in this case, Assange as being someone who's taking the side of the oppressors, they must go after him because he is in the way of the liberators. And this is what the what does the L stand for in PLA? Everybody knows that, but you know, PLA, Chinese Army, PLA, the People's Liberation Army. Well, liberate from what? What exactly were they liberating China from? Okay, they view the old model as a system that must be overturned and allow for the, quote, liberation of the human, liberation of the people. And that doesn't mean the people are going to be put in charge in any meaningful way. No, no, no. But they view themselves as the liberators, and they will come up with new groups that need liberation. I mean, go ask, was it Elliot Page, Ellen Page? I don't even know which one they're going by today. You know, I can't believe the governments and these people are trying to oppress us poor marginalized groups. And again, and this is where I get into, and we were just talking about this with Darren Beatty, this is why the most loyal foot soldiers of the regime will be those upon which their entire existence and their entire authority is dependent on the regime itself. Joshua, only a couple of minutes left with you, but I want to also point out, and you and I will do more talks about this, but it's also a message of hope, because these people have been beaten before in the past, and we identify and tell the stories of people who have beaten the unhumans. Isn't that right?
That's right. That's right. There are several ways to defeat a communist revolution uprising, whether it's a traditional one where there's literally blood in the streets and there's mobs waving the red flag, whatever the symbols that they have, or it's more of a covert, highly targeted, what we call in the book, a micro revolution that takes place every single day when the mob, the red mob, brings terror to an individual or to an organization, attempting to dox them, attempting to cancel them, attempting to destroy them. And there are ways to fight back. And one of them is the most persuasive technique that is the oldest technique in human civilization, and that is reciprocity. We talk about reciprocity in the book and how useful it is, but it's the idea that whatever they do to you, you will do to them much heavier. That, of course, was the atomic diplomacy strategy that prevented a nuclear World War III. If you nuke us, we'll nuke you way worse. And as that worked, Americans versus Soviets, it works with humans versus unhumans. What you do to us, we will do back to you. This is why Francisco Franco, this is why even Julius Caesar, preempting a proto-communist revolution, these were strong men surrounded by strong men. They showed up and they said, in the words of Francisco Franco, "Wherever I am, there shall be no communism." And they meant it. They had the means and they did something with it. And so the book is also a call to action for men and women of means, of influence in the popular culture, to stop hiding, stop staying anonymous behind your little pack that you throw a few hundred grand at this or that candidate, and get involved and do something. We have people like Elon Musk who are single-handedly protecting free speech in America where it's otherwise been lost. But when you have a one man in the arena, that's a problem. We need more.
You'll be hearing a lot more from Joshua Lysak and myself on this subject. The book is Unhumans. Skyhorsepublishing.com is where you can get it for pre-order right now. Ladies and gentlemen, you have our permission to lay ashore.